Now I'd like to introduce my friend from Independence Blue Cross, the Vice President of Corporate Communications, Donna Farrell.
Thank you, sir. All right. Thank you so much, David. Welcome, everyone. Good morning on this rainy morning. I said walking in. I don't know whether the extreme cold, the snow, or this rain is the worst. Probably I'll take the rain over that extreme cold and the snow. Special welcome to any of our customers who are here today, our friends. We're really glad you came out on this rainy morning to join us. We have a very special relationship with KYW News Radio here at Independence, and on behalf of our CEO, Dan Hilferty, really want to say thank you for what you do. Over the past year, Dan has made quite a point, whenever he is speaking in public, to say thank you to journalists. What you do matters, and it matters to all of us. And I certainly am a regular listener, and now, of course, I'm following all of you on Twitter as well. This is our third year to host this really important event, as 2019 already feels like it's 8 months old, but we really are just starting 2019. This important look at what's ahead for all of us. I always find that we get tremendous insights from all of the reporters here, and I, you know, really personally enjoy Steve Nicasey's jokes as well. For anyone who is listening on the podcast, for later when this post, you can't see what everyone in the room is looking at. We're welcoming everyone here at what we call Independence Live at 1919 Market Street, right in Center City. I think everybody in the room would agree, this isn't how you expect a health insurer to look, right? This is a this is an important community hub. Not just for us, but we believe our outward face for the community. And I would encourage anybody to come down here, visit again. This is where you can take classes, whether it's yoga or cooking. I certainly could benefit from the cooking classes. Free to members. And we have agents here who solve our members' problems all day. We call them super agents because they are. And they're empowered to solve any problem that our members come in that they might be facing or help them get coverage, because we know how important it is these days to have health insurance coverage. So welcome and enjoy what you're in for. It's a real treat. And I'm going to turn things back to KYW now and Program Director Alex Silverman. Alex?
Thank you so much, Donna. Thank you for being such great partners with us. Like Donna said, I'm Alex Silverman. I'm the program director at KYW News Radio. I want to throw one quick fact at you. The reporting staff at KYW News Radio, and that does not include all of the anchors, all of the production assistants, all of the digital staff, everybody who makes the radio station run on the backside, just the reporters that you hear on the radio have a combined experience of 472 years covering the news in Philadelphia. That's unmatched in the city of Philadelphia, probably unmatched anywhere in the country. It's really an amazing thing we have at KYW News Radio and an amazing thing for the city of Philadelphia. We have a mission statement on the wall of our newsroom. The mission is to deliver relatable stories, stories that matter to you, as the line you hear on the radio goes, stories that are compelling, and stories that set the agenda for news coverage in this great city and its suburbs. And we want to tell them not just on 1060 AM, which you've been hearing us for 53 years, but on multiple platforms, kywnewsradio.com, your smart speaker, which 8% of the U.S. population got a smart speaker this past holiday season. It's an explosion, and it's a new avenue for us to communicate to you directly in your home. Any place else you're looking for information, that's where we want to be. So that's our mission, and you're going to hear today from some of the people who've been helping us accomplish it over the years. First, I want to again thank Harvest Seasonal Wine Bar and Grill for the fantastic spread. Hope you all enjoyed it this morning, and I'd like to welcome their Director of Operations, John Friedman, up to chat with you a bit about what to expect in his industry in the year ahead.
Thanks. Thank you. Morning, everyone. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I just wanted to briefly touch on what we see happening in the hospitality industry. So the days of fine dining have changed. Getting dressed up, white tablecloth, those sensibilities have changed. People still expect the same amount of quality, good food, good service, but they're looking for it sort of translated differently. So basically, what we try to do is we try to engage with our guests. Social media is exploding. There are opportunities for us to, you know, every person has a smartphone. They can take pictures. They can post on what they're seeing, what they're eating. We have an opportunity to react in real time in a way that didn't exist previously. We can, you know, it's extremely important for us to listen, understand, and react to what people are saying. It opens up a world of opportunity for us. The tools that are being created make this really the wave of the future for the hospitality industry. I'm obviously not going to take up any more of your time, but I'll be around if anyone has any further questions.
Thanks very much, John. And now for the main event, I want to turn the program over to the moderator for this morning's conversation. You know Steve Nicasey as the host of Reporters Roundup on KYW News Radio. You should also know he's been a member of our newsroom team for almost 30 years. He's been behind the mic for just about every major event that's happened in this region ever since. So Steve Nicasey, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Alex. How's everybody doing this morning? Doing well? Thank you for coming out. Dr. Brian McDonough, who does their medical reports and sponsored by this fine organization, I think he is responsible for half of the 472 years of experience. He's been doing medical reports for how long now? A long, long time. And we appreciate his efforts and his sponsorship as well. Well, day 34 of the government shutdown. How's everybody doing with that? Lots of groans. Anybody directly impacted, like families, a spouse who might work for the government? You guys are lucky. You are lucky. This story hits home for me because my lovely wife is among the 800,000 federal furloughed employees, and she works for the Justice Department, so she's working like, you know, a couple days a week and hoping that we'll be paid at the end of this. And I guess you could say we're like on the government shutdown diet plan now. And I'm grateful for Harvest Seasonal Wine Bar and Grill. Yes, we brought Ziploc bags to take some food home and take care of it. A lot of people try to keep those New Year's resolutions to lose a few pounds, and I can understand that. Unfortunately, when you watch what you eat, colleagues bring other food in, and you're watching what they eat. That Five Guys smells pretty good right now. Sure would like that instead of these carrots. But for those who are really, really looking to keep their New Year's resolution and lose those ugly pounds, we found the ideal way, and I think I learned this from Dr. Phil, who told me that if you consume a meal naked standing in front of the mirror, you will lose weight. It'll happen every time. You just have to stick to it. But the problem is, and the reason why that works is that before you can finish a meal, I found the restaurant always kicks me out. So that's, I'm pulling a blooming onion along with me. No, bring me back. So we're all struggling with those issues, and hopefully some movement on the government shutdown will keep you posted throughout the day and night on KYW News Radio. Well, let's get right to it. We don't have the Mercury 7 astronauts, but pretty much close to it, for those of old enough to remember that. I want to get everybody to stand up, and I'll introduce you quickly, and then we will start the everybody stand up and face the music here. We'll start with Pat Loeb. Pat, raise your hand. She's our City Hall Bureau Chief and working just down the street here. Also next, our Suburban Bureau Chief, KYW's Jim Melwert. Say hello. Mike DiNardo, who covers education and has been doing so for a long time. Cherry Gregg, our Community Affairs Reporter, who's all over the place and every platform of media known to humankind. And Melanie Roy, who is our Director of Digital Services. Hello, Melanie. And our tech editor, Mr. Ian Bush. So this is our panel, and we'll go ahead and have a seat. And at the end of the of this, we will take your questions. So first off, Pat, come on up. Monday through Friday on Reporters Roundup. It's my pleasure to work with the best broadcast professionals I have encountered over the years. And we'll begin with a Philadelphia native, a little bit of a bio on you, who works in the heart of the city. Your experience includes work, of course, as a foreign correspondent. You covered disasters, earthquakes, volcanoes. Did that ever get her prepared for what's happening down the street at City Hall or what? But years ago, you know, among the many things that happened, of course, City Council put a tax on alcohol and then raised the other taxes that drove everybody to drink. So I think they've found a circle to make everybody pay. But anyhow, let's go ahead and get comfortable, Pat.
Okay.
And we have a few things to cover. We are preparing for city elections, and that's taking a lot of your time.
Yeah, and buckle your chin strap, because it's going to be a wild ride. I'm looking at you, Democratic City Council at Large primary. Uh-huh. And there are already 25 candidates that have either declared or registered campaign committees.
25 candidates.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg. You can't even circulate nominating petitions for another month. So the expectation is that by the time it closes in March, there will be 50 candidates on the ballot.
And that's for 5 slots on the November ballot. And of course, because of the registration edge, all 5 of them will win. So the primary is going to be fierce. At least 3 incumbents are running, but they're all first-termers, so they're not shoo-ins. And, you know, when you divide the electorate by 50 candidates for 5 slots, people could conceivably win with a couple thousand votes. So it's going to be crazy.
So why so many candidates? 25 at this point.
25 and likely to be 50. I think that you're still seeing the backlash from the 2016 election that catalyzed a lot of young people and underrepresented groups to get involved in politics who hadn't normally been. There's a transsexual woman running, the local head of Black Lives Matter, so a lot of non-traditional candidates. And this will be more like judicial elections where ballot position matters, and in our own quaint and quirky way, we'll decide that by picking names out of a horn and heart at coffee can. Does anybody even remember Horn and Hart?
There used to be one across from City Hall, right?
Right. Oh, little, they were all everywhere. Yeah.
Exactly. How about the mayoral race?
Oh, yes. The mayor is running, and he will have opposition, but he seems utterly unconcerned. And first of all, because he always gives this aura of hating his job, so who cares? But he also says, like, what are you going to run against? Eliminating pre-K, and, you know, that is his way of signaling that I know soda tax opponents, the soda industry is going to pour money into this race, and, you know, you don't scare me. And it'll also be poured into the council races.
It's going to be interesting and fascinating to watch. Now, we were talking before our forum here of how the opioid crisis kind of blindsided the mayor. How did that happen?
Well, you know, when you think a year ago, it was not even on my radar that people were living in encampments in Kensington, but that was a major preoccupation all of last year. And so 3 of them are gone, and the 4th one will be gone by the end of this month. So the city got right on it, but it was huge. It was a black hole of money and effort. And, you know, the addiction problem exacerbates the social problems that it draws the resources from. So it's a really incredibly destructive epidemic.
Mm. Looking for money perhaps outside the city to help with that. And
always.
For every yeah. possible thing. You work in City Hall in an office that has not seen any renovation in how long?
I know.
It's unbelievable. It really is. But you make it work through the technology that we have. Yeah. And what's it like working in City Hall?
Oh, it's great. You know, I love walking in the morning and passing the mayor's office, and then my office is right across the hall with my own key. There's these beautiful cantilevered steps that I walk up every morning to. It's a magnificent building, and then it's, you know, to me, it's the best story in Philadelphia.
Now, they have new security at City Hall.
Right, metal detectors and an X-ray machine, and
Yeah, we're just like an airport now.
Do you have to take your shoes off when you go to work?
No.
Okay. So when you're not covering the mayor and everything else, what do you do with your personal time? If we may be so bold as to ask.
Well, I don't really have downtime. I mean, I just had my vacation, and my husband and I took our four adult children to the Pacific Rim. That's how I spent my vacation. And I don't know, I swim, I run, I row, I ski. How many communities can I tap into here? and that's just the way it is.
You are a traveler as well.
Yeah.
But we're glad to have you in Philly, especially working for us as our City Hall Bureau Chief. KYWB's Pat Loeb, ladies and gentlemen. You know, few things are more important for parents than education. For children, and we cover it all, pre-K, kindergarten, grade school, high school, and beyond. And, you know, some people say college is the opposite of kidnapping. They demand over $100,000, or they'll send your kid back. It's like an opposite thing going on there. But Mike DiNardo's been covering, you've been on the education beat for how long now?
Probably about 30 years or so, even more. But go back to the Connie Clayton days.
Exactly, yeah. And the days when we didn't have a school board. So.
True, but that was only 17 years. Right. But there was a school board before there was a school reform commission. But
over 35 years at KYW News Radio, and you have we're beginning a third move for you, right?
Started out at 5th and Market, and then 4th and Market, mm-hmm. and then 15th and Spring Garden, and then down the street here to 24th and Market.
Right, so. And we'll be doing that pretty soon. And I have to bring this up because.
Okay.
A lot of people are still surprised by this. Did you know that Mike DiNardo worked at a slaughterhouse at one time?
And I still eat Scrapple. I made Scrapple, and I still eat it. It's mostly meat, ladies and gentlemen, mostly meat.
I think it probably prepared him for the rough and tumble world of education and school board and funding crises and everything going on.
Steve, once you've held a warm, beating beef heart in your hand, you can do just about anything.
Okay. All right. Let's move on, shall
okay.
we? A new school board to talk about. So what's different with that?
It's a new era, yeah. After 17 years of state control, Philadelphia has a local board now, 9 members appointed by the mayor. And we're still trying to see what the personality of this board is like, but in the 7 months they've been around, there is an air of openness and transparency that wasn't there in the School Reform Commission. The new board posts its meeting agendas online days before a meeting so the public can see what they're talking about. They have committees, Finance and Facilities Committee and Curriculum Committees, and those committee meetings of the board are open to the public, and people go to those meetings and they listen to what the board members are debating, and they ask questions, and they watch the educational sausage being made, and it really gets the public involved. So if there is any one difference that I can see right away, it's that the new board is committed to being open and communicating with the public. And they still have tough decisions to make, but at least they want to get the public involved in what they're doing.
Charter schools are always in the news. How will the new board handle charter schools?
That's a good question, and that's one of the things that we are waiting to see how they do. The first test of where they stand on charters was the School Reform Commission had denied a renewal of the Richard Allen Charter School, but the school board, the new board, the local board, last month allowed the Richard Allen Charter School to continue with a bunch of conditions. So there were a lot of people who were hoping that, gee, we have a new local board. Maybe they'll have they'll take a hard line and won't spend so much money on charter schools. But you couldn't get a real read from that one decision. Next month, this board will consider applications for 3 new charters, and there, maybe we can take the temperature of where the board stands on charters. Of course, charters are controversial to say the least. So maybe next month when these three charters have their applications considered by the board, we'll get some idea of where they stand. Charters are a huge issue because one-third of the school district budget goes to charter schools. One-third of the kids in Philadelphia go to charter schools, and it's a huge chunk of the district's budget.
And as we continue to acquaint ourselves with the new board, a very important factor, perhaps one of the most powerful unions in the city, the PFT. How about that relationship?
Well, under the state control, the law that created the School Reform Commission also prohibited teacher strikes in Philadelphia. Well, that law is gone now, and there's a local board, and the PFT has the right to strike again. So they were watching very closely the events in Los Angeles from the last week where their teachers were on strike for 6 days. And the issues are not so much about salaries and health care, but teachers are concerned about things like class size and working conditions. And those are some of the issues that the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers are going to be looking for in their next contract. Their current deal runs out in August of 2020, so negotiations will likely begin in 2019 to that new contract.
Some of the fun things that we talk about in the newsroom, and it's probably every morning, we're talking about baseball.
Of course.
And Mike DiNardo is a wealth of knowledge with baseball. You've been a lifelong Phillies fan.
Long-suffering
Phillies fan.
20 days.
But actually, things are looking up for the season coming up.
They are, yeah. I have to warn that other teams in the National League East seem to have gotten better, too. I mean, you know, the Mets have Robbie Cano now and Edwin Diaz, and the Nationals signed Patrick Corbin, and the Braves have Josh Donaldson. But the Phillies are probably on the verge, we hope, right, of making a big free agent signing. And personally, I prefer Bryce Harper. I think the Phillies need a left-handed bat. Defensively, they're going to be better because Reese Hoskins is back at first base now, and that will improve your outfield defense. So,
sure.
I think 20 days in 20 days, when pitchers and catchers report, we will be ready.
And we found out that, of course, Roy Halladay inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, a big honor for the family, and we truly miss him. He won't be inducted with the Phillies colors, though.
No, although I was heartened by Bob Ford's column in the Inquirer, where he said that he thought that Roy Halladay would have gone in with a Phillies hat if he had made the choice. And his work ethic and what he did for the team, certainly he's deserving of the Hall of Fame, and a lot of us would have liked to have seen him wear a Phillies hat in the Hall of Fame, but it'll be sweet either way.
All right. Swinging a long drive, and hopefully better days ahead for the Phillies. Pitchers and catchers reporting.
20 days.
How does he know this stuff? Ladies and gentlemen, Mike DiNardo. Thank you, Mike. Well, we continue our forum. How many people live in the suburbs? Oh, making a trip every day. Must have been a little bit longer today. Any problem getting the car started earlier this week when it was like 5 degrees below zero? And I don't know. I think people out in the suburbs, I'm a city dweller, so I'm thinking people in the suburbs, they're country folk, right? We were talking about eating grits for breakfast back in the green room. And, of course, so I brought up biscuits and gravy, which is a real weakness of mine. It's been said out in the suburbs, especially in parts of upper Bucks County, that it takes two people to eat a possum in upper Bucks County. That's one to eat and the other to look for the car. So,
Wow. I'm going to have a mess to clean up after this one.
I don't know.
I have to go to Bucks County today.
I don't think that's true, though. So let's just keep this our little secret. Our Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melwert, earning his stripes as working all of these cases, of course, that we all know about his coverage with the Bill Cosby trial. Amazing. Kathleen Kane, another big story. And so much going on in the political world. So many trials you cover. And I always feel for reporters because you cover these very difficult cases, and then you go home, and it stays with you for a while. So it takes a special person to report this kind of story. But if we may, let's move on to politics, and the county elections that are coming up, and there's a lot to look for there.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we pay so much attention to presidential elections and to Congress, and rightfully so, but then these so-called off years where you have county and municipal races really are the races that affect all of us. You know, Pat mentioned the city races in the city and the suburbs. These are the roads, these are the schools, these are things that really affect us day in and day out. And the suburbs, I mean, we've watched these registration numbers, demographics, and everything switch over the past, you know, decades, and we've always kind of been watching to see, you know, if the suburban Republican has generally had the stronghold. Montgomery County flipped completely in 4 years ago, where they lost every row office. The commissioner's board had already gone Democratic. What's interesting to watch in Montgomery County is the Republican Party. The candidate that won the seat on the commissioner's board 4 years ago was not backed by the county party. He actually beat the two candidates, beat one candidate in the primary, and then beat another candidate, both of whom were backed by the Montgomery County Republicans, to get a seat on the board. He's running with his brother, Joe Gale. He's running with his brother this time. So now you have two candidates potentially who are not backed by the county party. So it's going to be interesting to see how that primary shakes out, to see if the county party can kind of get control back.
Yeah, you'll be watching, and so much focus with Montgomery County and the GOP. How about the Republican Party and elsewhere, Chester, Bucks, Delaware County?
Yeah, again, with those changing registration numbers, interesting in Chester and Delaware counties, you have two new leaders of the county parties. In Delaware County, Tom McGarrigle takes over. He was a state senator who actually lost in November as part of the quote-unquote blue wave, so he certainly understands that a lot of people feel right now that a vote for a Democrat is a vote against Trump. So his goal is to get the messaging back to, this is about county, this is about schools, this is about roads, this is about a county. You know, he points to the fact that it's been Republican leadership, they haven't had tax increases, so the difficulty is getting that message out. Same in Chester County, GOP chairman in the county, 34-year-old, he's in his 30s, I think he's 34. Mm-hmm. His name is Rick Lockery. He's been a recorder of deeds, head of Young Republicans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they both admit that they've not done a good job in social media. They've not done a good job reaching younger voters to get that Republican message out, and they really want to shift that message from the wall and other things in Washington back to, this is what Republicans have done in the county. So we'll see, you know, this year if they can do that, if they can hold the line, or, you know, if like Montgomery County, they start losing some of these row offices.
Do you prefer covering politics over criminal cases, or is it pretty much even?
Some of these criminal cases, as you mentioned, can be really difficult, especially anything involving children. I have children, which is why I have notes in front of me, because the part of my brain that used to remember things has been rewritten by the Frozen soundtrack. But
don't forget the Lego music, too.
Yeah. So some of them can be challenging. You mentioned Kathleen Kane and Bill Cosby. I mean, that was part of my life. I mean, that was 2-3 years of my life where it was just all encompassing. And, you know, you'd go to parties and somebody would ask about Bill Cosby, and I'd start wandering in the weeds and like talking about like super detail, and they're like, yeah, I small talk, man, really didn't care. So it's a good mix, and that's one of the things I love about my job, is the variety and switching from, you know, all different things.
Absolutely. Another aspect of your reporting, and we touched on it with Pat, is the opioid crisis, and so much going on in the suburbs with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, two counties now with lawsuits. Chester County just filing their lawsuit against pharmaceutical companies, arguing that they knew back in the early 2000s that these were addictive. That you know, especially in the Delaware County lawsuit, that they fudged information to say that These pills were more effective than they were. Of course, the drug companies are pushing back, saying, look, we followed all the rules. We did everything the FDA told us to do, and we care as much as everyone else does. The interesting thing about the Chester County one, and Ian Bush covered that story, there's been a lot of pushback from residents in Chester County because these companies are based in Chester County. So, you know, it's interesting to follow. You know, but again, just the, not only the lawsuits, but also just seeing in courts the lives that are ruined by this, seeing, you know, not just the overdose deaths that we hear so much about, but also the addiction and how it can just ruin lives and devastating.
That it has, and updates to come. If I'm picking teams, you know, like a grade school, you're picking people for your team, Jim would be the first person I would pick. Because you are an Iron Man, and, yeah. And some people don't know that.
Yeah.
Now you've taken part in competitions, and also you're involved in an amazing effort.
Yeah, I've been fortunate. So I donated a kidney to my aunt in 2006. 6 years later, I did Iron Man, which is a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and 26.2 mile run. And so I've been fortunate to kind of be a living donor example of how it really transplantation works and has minimal effect on you afterward. And through KYW and Gift of Life, I've had the opportunity to participate in transplant games and been able to go every 2 years. It's an Olympic style event, and I've been able to report and share stories of just incredible people who are, you know, living with organ donation, and I'm very fortunate to take part in that and to meet these people and share these stories.
Well, it has built up his stamina to cover all of these stories in the suburbs. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Melwert, our Suburban Bureau Chief. Thank you, Jim. I don't know where this originated, but I understand a lawyer... lawyer joke.
Oh, goodness.
A lawyer had just undergone a surgical procedure and woke up and found all the blinds in his room were drawn. And when he woke up, he asked the nurse, well, what's going on with this? Why is it so dark in here? And the nurse said, well, there's a fire across the street. We didn't want to think that you had died. So,
oh, my goodness.
Instead of, you know, all lawyer jokes, two are true. Everything else is... Anyhow, why am I talking about lawyers right now? Well, our reporting staff includes a counselor at law, Cherry Gregg, our community affairs reporter, also a licensed attorney. Do people hit you up for legal advice in the newsroom?
Well, in the newsroom sometimes, but definitely in the community. Okay. And so, yeah, people do hit me up.
Okay.
I don't give it out, though,
okay.
Anymore.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
There's no billable hours in the newsroom.
No.
A member of the Pennsylvania and Georgia bars,
yes.
Past president of the Philadelphia Association of Black Journalists, and now our community affairs reporter. And what some great coverage of the MLK Day of Service earlier this week.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I can't believe it's been several years that I've covered this. I wake up, I come into work at like 4 a.m. I was there at 4:45. It's really, really cold. But... you know, the whole room and the space warms up as people get to work. 5,000 volunteers doing all sorts of things. Yeah.
It's so interesting.
In Dr. Martin Luther King's name.
And the biggest effort in the entire country.
It is.
And you were all over it and great coverage. You also do the award-winning feature, Philadelphia Game Changers.
Yes.
And, of course, Flashpoint.
Yes.
That we talk about. So
yeah, that's
you
not
busy.
Your grandmother's public affairs show. It gets hot. It gets hot. Yeah, I saw your eyes right there. Yeah, it gets hot.
She will walk you. She will walk you through the flames. And I've never been scalded yet. So in Cherry, we trust. And we've as we've talked about on Reporters Roundup, and it is a recurring issue. Criminal justice reform.
Yes.
Local level, national level.
Yeah, it's been a big year. It's been a big 12 months for criminal justice reform. When you have the ACLU agreeing with President Donald Trump. I mean, you know it's a big deal, right? At the end of last year, President Donald Trump signed into law the First Step Act. Anybody heard of that? Yeah, it doesn't go as far as a lot of people want it to go, but it deals with the disparities between crack and powder cocaine. That was part of the war on drugs of the 80s and early 90s. And so it pumps a lot of money into the federal prison system, gives incentives for good behavior, and will open the door for thousands of inmates in federal prisons right now to get shortened sentences and possibly see freedom. And that's on the national level. Locally, we've seen a prison close the infamous House of Corrections really closed last year. And over the past 3 years, the city of Philadelphia has reduced its prison population by more than a third. They're dealing with issues of cash bail. No longer do you get prosecuted for small amounts of pot. But I did a show on now Flashpoint. Don't take it outside of Philly, okay, y'all? Because you could get locked up. I'm just letting y'all know. We do teach you on Flashpoint what to do so that you won't, you know, get caught out there. But anyway, that's just a little side. But there's a
we
lot
have
of
have to talk after this.
We'll talk after this. But there are a lot of different things that are happening right now. And we have a very progressive district attorney in Larry Krasner. He's very controversial, but he has implemented some changes, including his conviction integrity unit, which wasn't really doing very much under previous administrations, but we've seen a number of people who were wrongfully convicted be released.
And criminal records, we've talked about also that and the issue of expungement.
Oh, yeah. Just this month, the Clean Slate Act went into effect here in Pennsylvania. And it's a piece of major legislation, and let me tell you why. A few years ago, I covered what would be a community, you know, job fair for ex-offenders, right? I get there, there's literally 5,000 people out there. Helicopters from CBS3 and other news stations came out, and there was a swarm of folks outside the MSB building. What we found is that a lot of people can't get jobs, and a lot of times it's not because of convictions. It's because of arrests that were never taken off their record. It's because of court cases where they were never convicted. And so this new Clean Slate Act automatically expunges arrests and non-convictions, and it also allows people to seal their records when it comes to low-level misdemeanors and felonies. So it's a really big deal. And Pennsylvania is actually viewed as being a leader when it comes to expungements. Can you believe that?
Yeah, and yeah. It must be so frustrating for people with that kind of record. With,
yeah.
I mean, with employment as it is, there are jobs out there.
Yeah, and let me just tell you, Philadelphia is home to more than a quarter of a million people with a criminal past. And so these individuals can't get jobs. A lot of times you can't get housing. I've heard stories of senior citizens because of decades-old convictions can't get into senior facilities. It affects your ability to get student loans. So if you're trying to save your, you know, change your life, you were 18, got in trouble, you're 30 now, got two kids, it's hard for you to go back to school and better your life. And then people tell you, you know, lift yourself up by the bootstraps. It's hard if you can't educate yourself and get a job. And so a lot of these folks become some of the best employees that organizations have seen. People like Brown ShopRite have promoted folks. And I will say this is a little side, but a lot of people who were convicted of drugs, selling drugs, become the best managers, believe it or not. Like, and I talked to Jeff Brown. He said that, you know, they understand product, promotion, and all these things. And so a lot of times people just don't have the opportunity to use their skills for good. And you know, this Clean Slate Act allows people to do that. Sorry.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a rock star these days.
The Notorious.
Notorious. A movie coming out.
Yes.
An earlier movie.
Yeah.
Some media outlet tried to kill her off early this week. She's alive and well. And we are all keeping an eye on the U.S. Supreme Court. There was just basically a non-decision about transgender in the military.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, y'all remember Brett Kavanaugh? Y'all heard of this guy? Remember that? All eyes have been on the Supreme Court for months, and with the notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she has a nickname, okay, and T-shirts out. People are watching the court, and Brett Kavanaugh, now that he's on the court, he's doing exactly what President Donald Trump appointed him to do, which was to be a very strong conservative voice. This week, there was a lot of outrage because now the ban on transgender individuals in the military is moving forward, and because there was an injunction, so basically it can move forward now pending lower court litigation. And I'll also mention that coming up, they just accepted a case dealing with the Second Amendment out of New York City, where in New York you cannot carry guns with you, right? If you do, you can carry it to the shooting range, but it has to be in a locked box. gun owners have sued and said that, you know, violates their Second Amendment right to own guns and their ability to travel. So this court will be hearing that issue, and it could become a major problem when we're talking about cities, inner cities like Philadelphia, like New York City, like Los Angeles, that have serious gun issues, and this could have a huge impact nationwide.
And you'll be watching it for
us. I will be watching it.
I have a face for radio. Cherry, on the other hand, has a face for TV, and you do hits on CBS 3 Eyewitness News.
I do.
And from time to time. Anything strange happen during your live shots, or tell us something we don't know?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. People kind of walk up to you. When I did for 2.5 years, I did the live mornings on Sundays for CBS 3, and people don't realize that when you're in the truck, that is your office. It's like, and so people roll up on you in your office, right? You're in the middle of writing scripts. And what I would do is a live shot on television and then a live shot on radio, back to back. And so that those couple minutes are very, very important. And so I had a lot of people sort of knock on the window, want to take pictures and selfies. And then I have this like strange look on my face, you know, because I'm like, I have 30 seconds. But you know, I love people. And I mean, honestly, I really do. So anytime anybody wants to say hello and take a selfie, I'm always down. Yeah.
And we love having you on our staff. Cherry Gregg, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so
on
much.
On our forum this morning. So how many people have been on social media already this morning? Show of hands. Oh, a lot of hands. A lot of hands. Just taking pictures and posting them of what we're doing here. And a great way to stay in touch. You know, Facebook is, for all of its evils, Facebook has always bailed me out because, oh, I get to remember that birthday now. So that's a good thing to have. Something to try on Facebook, I understand. If you change your name to Nobody, Nobody is your screen name on Facebook. When you see a really ugly post, you can press the like button and it'll say, nobody likes this. So that's if you have a lot of free time. Social media, of course, a big part of all we do at KYW, and all of the platforms are indeed covered. And managing it all for us, our Director of Digital News, Melanie Roy, and a part of our panel this morning. You've been with KYW for a long time. You began your career, what, in 2006 as a desk assistant?
Yeah, hard to believe, right?
It is.
Feels like yesterday.
And a former president of the Philadelphia Black Journalists Association. So you do so much with social media and keep us keep us focused in that regard. And what a difficult job that must be. But speaking of Facebook, you've been covering some developments regarding that.
Yeah, it's sort of been dubbed the tech lash. So there's been congressional hearings, there have been multiple lawsuits, multiple statements by Facebook. They seem to have realized the power that they hold, and they're trying to make some changes. They are prompted to make these changes by sort of the FCC, and they're facing fines. So they're trying to regulate themselves. So part of regulating themselves has been making their political ads more transparent. So when you see them, you know who targeted you. Also, they're investing in more employees to help monitor hate speech and misinformation. They're investing in software to better detect misinformation and bad actors. And they're also partnering with people like the AP to fact check information, so in real time for you.
On the matter of hate speech, and it's an issue that we deal with almost every week, hate speech on the internet, where does it stand at this point, and can it be stopped?
I don't think it'll ever be stopped. I think given the right restrictions put in by social networks to help protect their users, which a lot of social networks have done. So my personal advice to people, if they're experiencing hate speech online, is really simple. I say don't feed the trolls. Hit block, delete, or mute.
And it really is, it can be a learning experience because You think back to some of the episodes of Seinfeld from the 90s, and some of them don't translate very well to modern times, and a matter of discrimination and not so much hate. That's a pretty harsh word, but times change, and people need to be exposed to a learning experience from time to time. How to protect personal information on the Internet? You know, that is something that a lot of people, well, some people think about, but maybe not necessarily do.
You know, I fear there is a divide on protecting your personal information, because I've spoken to like colleges, and I feel like there are certain generation who don't care. They grew up on the Internet, and their information is there, and they're fine with it. Other people are not, and nobody really should be fine with it. But I always say change your password. I've spoken to experts. They say change your password 4 times a year. I don't think that's necessarily realistic. Other advice I've heard is to tie it to daylight saving. So when you change your clocks, you check your batteries, change your passwords. So it's twice a year. That's something. Also, I would say check your privacy settings on social media, because sometimes they change, especially on Facebook. I would say check them once a year. Create strong passwords. I've heard this thing about passphrases now instead of passwords. I also read a book where it said that you should make, if you have a goal, or you know, we just went into the new year, people have resolutions, you can make your password your New Year's resolution. So like when I was running for president of PABJ, my password was PABJ Prez 2017. That's an easy way to sort of protect yourself. And also, don't use Facebook to sign into everything. Create some other random account, send everything there.
All right, good advice. A fun aspect of your work is pop culture, keeping up to date with everything that's going on. And if I want to know what's happening, you know, with media and that kind of thing, I'll ask Melanie. And one of the activities that you do, especially this time of year, I understand, when the weather is really cold and you don't want to go out, binge watching. And yes. If they gave out Olympic medals, would you have a gold?
Right now, I think I'd have a goal. I've been battling a cold for what feels like forever, so I haven't been going out much. But I just finished season 1 and season 2 of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Yeah. It's really good. And I met an actor from The West Wing a couple of months ago on a train to D.C., very random. And I hadn't seen an episode of The West Wing. He played Toby. So I just started The West Wing, too.
Okay. And the Oscar nominations came out this week. And Black Panther, an action movie, nominated for Best Picture. It's going to be fascinating to see how
it
does.
Made history.
Yeah, it did make history. Well, we will continue to see history unfold and watch it in social media. And Melanie Roy will keep us up to date on KYW. Thank you so much, Melanie. Something I was wondering the other day, is a clean house the sign of broken internet at home? I don't know. And the people who, the security people at Samsung stores, are they called Guardians of the Galaxy? They might be. Questions to ponder. And when we have anything tech-related questions to ponder, we always go to Ian Bush, because he's our go-to guy. Tech editor, anchor, reporter, desk editor. Ian is a Villanova grad. Who's worked at KYW since 2002, right?
Right. Yeah, October of 2002. I still have my, I have a scan of the first paycheck I ever got.
Is that right?
Like $360.
Okay. I'm a little jealous now. I think. Earned his master's degree, produces the amazing KYW Month and Week in Sound. It is something else. You should check it out. Now, he returns for our executive briefing, and you brought us updates from the Consumer Electronics Show, which is the ultimate candy show for so many people.
Yeah, and I think we all need a little break from the relentless news cycle these days. I certainly do button down a bit. So the only problem is you got to start saving now if you want some of this stuff by Christmas. And actually, unlike some previous years, we focused on some things that are going to be out this year for holiday shopping. There was this TV that rolls into itself. It's a spectacle in its own right. So when it's not being used, it sits in this box, which is a wonderful Dolby Atmos speaker. It's a sound bar. When you press the power button, there's a door on the top of it that slides open or slides
into itself. And this TV rolls up, and somehow it's supported. It supports itself. There are these slats of display that you cannot tell that they are separated into, you know, 100 or so different things. Now, of course, this is going to be the 65-inch screen, so already it's going to be expensive. But to have a functionality like that, I don't know. If you certainly can't afford it on a $300-some-dollar right. paycheck from 2002. it's not magic, but it's this brilliant engineering that they have. It's incredible to see what they can come up with.
It makes me think years down the road we're going to have entire walls, not just a screen, but entire walls that'll be a screen.
Sure, and you remember the projection TVs from back in the day and how kind of miserable they look. These are going to be sharper than ever. Steve, I did want to know if you would like never to get yelled at again for leaving the toilet seat up.
You know, in fact, I did that just a few minutes ago. I felt really badly about it. You know?
Well, is it worth $7,000 to you?
Oh, I probably.
Yeah. Well, Kohler has an intelligent toilet they're coming out with this year, so you can ask Alexa to flush for you. The groans. Yeah. Alexa will put the seat up and down for you. She will, or he will, has LED lighting to make it more of an immersive experience if you're into that in the toilet. You can control personalized cleaning and drying functions, aka a bidet.
Okay.
And you can ask your smart toilet to do all this for you.
Amazing. Amazing.
It's something.
And if you can change the voice too, I would imagine. And, well, much more to come from the CES and the aftermath and the pricing and all that. And we're hearing also about the cellular networks, 5G.
Yeah, 5G is going to be one of the big tech stories of the year. And it'll go into 2020. We'll hear a lot more about the fifth generation of cellular networks at the big mobile show in Barcelona next month. But just a side note, you may have seen some commercials for AT&T where they say, you have a 5GE phone, or maybe your phone, if you have AT&T and you have a certain phone, it'll come up on the top. It'll say 5GE. And it's a lie. Like, that is fake news. And they got called out for it. It's false advertising. All it is a better 4G network, a slightly updated 4G network. So we don't want to see people thinking that they have, you know, they already have the 5G phone. They're paying for this. So AT&T rightly got lambasted over it. But the real 5G, it's a strict set of technical specs that will allow everything to be faster. Think a movie, a 2.5-hour movie will download in 6 seconds rather than 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. But it will also allow driverless cars to communicate with each other. It will allow the next generation of health innovations, remote surgery, imaging, a really precise 3D imaging. So it's not just about, you know, the phone in your pocket or in your hand. Now there are some issues with right of way. You need new antennas for this. The wireless companies need new antennas to make 5G happen. And what they want to do is kind of put what look like erasers on the top of a pencil, but these would be antennas that go on top of light poles, utility poles, already existing infrastructure. They can just cap them off with these new antennas. Pennsylvania is among the legislatures that don't really think that's a great idea necessarily, or they want at least municipalities to have more say in what happens in that regard. So there's still a fight over that, but these phones are beginning to roll out, so the wireless companies want to get things going.
Quickly going back to self-driving cars, autonomous cars, a year, 2 years ago, it looked like by this time they would be everywhere, but there have been some problems.
Certainly have, and
thank goodness they're not everywhere, because we saw in Arizona the fatal Uber accident. They're not ready for prime time. What we may see this year are limited tests of short route mass transit kind of replacements. So shuttling people from, say, a subway exit to a place where they would, where a lot of them would tend to congregate, either a skyscraper or something like that, to get people used to the idea of these autonomous vehicles, but also to ensure that there's safety, that they have a fixed route that they go on. They will study the vehicles themselves. The computers inside will study reactions from people, reactions from pedestrians, and hopefully make everything safer for us.
I don't think I would be interested in a self-driving car unless they came equipped with a driver's side CPAP device. Then that might work out for it.
Well, you and I like to drive. Right. I don't know if I could get behind the wheel and just be passive about it. I like when the Schuylkill's not backed up. I like, you know, pressing the gas a bit.
Where the switch would be off most of the time.
Yeah.
Ian Bush and some cases of mistaken identity, from what I hear. Tell us more about that.
Well, most recently, I was covering the George H.W. Bush funeral in Washington, and I heard that there were calls, and I have a voicemail still on my machine at work, that were offering condolences because people thought, because I was covering it, because my last name is Bush and it's spelled the same way, that I was related, and that was, you know, that was nice of them. A few months ago, Governor Murphy, New Jersey Governor Murphy, took a vacation and refused to tell people where he was going. And it's fine that he you know, deserves privacy, everybody does at some point, but your public official, the governor of New Jersey, we need to know where you are,
right,
just in general. So we tracked him down to a small town, I think near Florence, in Italy, and I emailed the mayor of this town, and I had Google translate it in Italian for me. And he wrote back, and he just put a Wikipedia link to an Ian Bush, and it was an Ian Bush from Canada who had murdered two people, and he just put ?? After that, as if, yes, I had done this, but now I'm working at KYW and trying to find the governor of New Jersey. So some mistaken identity, but it's all, well, in good fun.
He is the real deal, Ian Bush, our tech editor. Well, that wraps up our formal program. Let's open the floor to any questions. If I can bring the panel up and make yourselves comfortable up here. And any issues you'd like to ask about, or what's happening at KYW, now's an opportunity to ask our panel. Question in the back.
Hi. You know, being a car dealer, you were at CES, and that has really been like an extension of like the Detroit Auto Show. You would agree,
although they less this year, they say it seemed, than in years past. It was more about Detroit, I think, this year, and hopefully we'll get some good unveils in Philly. But the Faraday Future, I think, was at the show 2 years ago. That made a huge splash. This year, I don't know. The only car I remember being wowed at in the coverage was the Audi, and it was not a driving experience, but it was, they have a partnership where you wear VR goggles, a passenger experience, either in the passenger seat or in the back, and the goggles allow for an experience such that you are put inside a video game, basically. As the car progresses, it feels like, it looks like to the wearer that you are also moving in this imagined world. The car stops at a crosswalk and it knows it because you're on the Audi navigation system, and the passenger can bop people on the head virtually as they walk across the street. You're right. It's such a cool look at automotive technology, but I thought less so this year.
So to get a shameless plug in, people ask me, like, when can I go to Barbaro on the Boulevard and buy a driverless car? Yeah. So I would ask you that because CNBC was covering it, I think, yesterday.
Yeah.
And they spent about 15 minutes on it. Like, I don't think my kids or my grandkids will have it. Do you know? Yeah. Actually driverless cars. And I think, you know, you opened up with, I think we sent a lot of mixed messages out.
Yep.
I think it's good technology and it's in the works, but isn't it super far down the road?
It's great headlines. Yeah,
yep.
You're right.
Okay. I just want to, yeah.
The city has to be ready. The highways, the infrastructure have to be ready for this kind of technology. They're not right now. It's far from it. So get a Jeep.
Get a Jeep
cheap.
Get a Jeep cheap. 300.
You'll be driving it. That's
and,
it.
And by the way, I saw cameras. I also have a face for radio. So you know what I mean. Thank you. Thank you
kindred,
very much.
Kindred spirit. Any other questions this morning?
And first off, thank you, Paul, for being with us today. It's a pleasure to have you, and we're happy to host you guys. And I mentioned maybe this is a question for Mike, but our beloved Carson Wentz recently, a story published about Carson and maybe not necessarily being the wholesome, great guy that to the level that perhaps we all hold him to. And I guess in a more broad sense, in a general sense about just reporting and what you guys do at KYW and the fact-checking and the sources and all the rigors that go into the work that you do day in and day out, editors, double-checking, like to the degree that that happens and in this era of fake news and other outlets that just report anything at any time. I mean, comparing how that story was promoted and put out there compared to what, say, a KYW would do in that regard, and just the different levels that you go through and what that really means or how much stock we should put in when we hear a story like that.
Thank you for the question, Jamie. A quick story. I helped to put together the Philadelphia Sports Writers Association banquet. Monday night before the banquet during the cocktail hour, I saw Joe Santoliquito, the writer who wrote the Carson Wentz story, and I said, Joe, how are you? What's going on? And he had this pained look on his face, and he said, you don't know? You haven't heard? And actually, I'd been at the hotel. I'd been getting ready for the banquet all day, and he told me that he'd written this story about Carson Wentz and how it was how he was getting killed on the internet. It had like a million hits and the backlash from it, and I had no idea. That said, I speak for all of us here, really care about what we do. We care about being fair. We care about being thorough. And it is better to be right than to be first. And a lot of times you see internet outlets, people on Twitter, someone who poses as a news organization, perhaps, they want to be first. They want to create attention. But we're not in that business. We're in the business of telling the truth, the real news with real sources that have been verified. So it's troubling when something like that happens because it paints all the media in a bad light and it makes people not trust us. And that's what we really want, is for people to trust us, because we care about this. We've all devoted our lives to serving the listeners by telling them stories that are true and that matter for them. So if that answers your question,
I think. Appreciate it. Maybe five Super Bowls from now, we'll forget about it.
Any other questions? I think the media got a slap on the wrist with the BuzzFeed story last week regarding the Russia probe and the degree of who called on somebody to lie before Congress, and certainly that was discussed. But it was attributed to the source at the time. So these are kind of difficult times of mainstream media dealing with these outside media reports. And in fact, we had I was talking to Ian about this before this began. When the violence in Sebring, Florida unfolded, there were a lot of tweets about the casualties, but we could not go there until it was actually verified by officials. So it is a fine line to walk in digesting that information. Any other questions?
For those of you who were close and followed it, were you surprised at all at the development of some of the Amazon HQ 2 results in the conversation?
No, I was not surprised that Philadelphia didn't get it. And I'm sorry, I think I missed the first part of your question.
That was exactly it. Were you surprised at all, you know, having been close to some of the conversations and the access you have to a lot of the folks who are close to the RFP process?
Yeah, I think that, Philadelphia did a great job of pitching itself, but I don't think it was right for that particular development. I did think maybe it'll be a sleeper choice, and it'll be, you know, Jeff Bezos will have some kind of social conscience where he'll want to elevate a city that's really struggling with a high poverty rate. But I'm not surprised that it turned out he didn't.
I wonder if many of us breathe this a bit of a sigh of a relief, you know, with transit and with traffic as it is, that a major development like that ended up not coming here. We have great gems in this city. The startups, Comcast for its some of its customer service woes, which it's trying to fix. Independence Blue Cross, very forward thinking health company. I think we can really do well with what we have, and we can exploit what we already have.
Question right there.
Question for Mike DiNardo. Being someone that's covered education for the number of years that you have, what do you think it is about Dr. Height's personality or governance style that's caused him to last this long in Philadelphia? Now, speaking as a teacher, one sabbatical.
I've had, I don't know how many conversations. He's never rattled. He's got the calm demeanor almost of a reverend, and that he's even keel. He seems to be a reasonable person who sees both sides, and he doesn't speak off the cuff. I was thinking about, I was wondering if they would, if any of the questions today would be, how long do you think Dr. Height's going to be around? Now, his contract is through 2022. He just signed a five-year extension. And superintendents never last that long. And if you asked me for a prediction, I would think just based on his personality and how well he's gotten along with the mayor and the legislature and people in this town, I think he's actually going to serve out a second term and be the superintendent until 2022.
Thank you for your question.
Hi. How are we weighing in as a city, both urban and suburban, regarding the assistance of helping the furloughed workers? How are we weighing in across the board? Do we have new banks, or are we doing something in our government to help the furloughed workers? So, you know, to subsidize, to help, to relieve some of the stress from them.
Yes, the city has granted extensions for payments of all fees that are paid to the city, like the water bill, your gas bill. If you have a tax payment plan, you can postpone it. So that's what the city's doing. There are about 30,000 federal workers in Philadelphia offices. They're not all Philadelphia residents, but those that are getting that relief. And then Philip Bundens, our local food cupboards, are providing food every Wednesday, which is, yesterday was the first one, and people were grateful but humiliated. And I mean, to think of yourself as an employer, would you want your employees to be kind of forced into going and waiting in line for food from a food bank? I don't know. I really wonder how long this can go on.
Can I just add that I know a lot of churches have stepped up and providing, they have funds now available. People have been donating to them and to help people, you know, pay for gas. Some people, especially TSA workers, have to get to work. And so there's been funds that have been created to help them get there. And I think SEPTA was providing free transit to the airport for TSA workers. There was an announcement about that as well.
And the head of the, not TSA, but the air traffic controllers yesterday put out a, like, incredibly dire warning that will keep me off of planes until this is over. He said that it's unprecedented, and he's never seen such a level of risk in his career.
All right, let's have one more round of applause for our panel here. Thank them all for being here today.